This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Madeira back here on the Dr. Madeira Show. Some people call me Dr. Sam, and you can follow me on Instagram at Dr. D-O-C-T-O-R, Sam Madeira, M-A-D-E-I-R-A. And so that's Dr. Sam Madeira on Instagram. And I placed a question there for a bunch of people to ask me anything about hormone health, how to improve your energy, optimal body composition, and such. And I got a bunch of responses. So I'm going to answer those in today's Ask Me Anything AMA podcast. And that's what we're going to discuss today. I also have a men's only Facebook group. If you're on Facebook, you can go and search in the groups under groups, put in Live Strong, two words. And that is the group that you want to join. And there's also a men's and women's group called Apollo Health Tribe, because my clinic is called Apollo Health Clinic after the Greek god of medicine. So today we're going to get into some questions, hopefully answer people's questions about hormone health. We had one question that's very broad. Should somebody get hormone testing, and what age should somebody start getting hormone testing? Well, I would say get hormone testing when you feel good. Every year, so that when you feel bad, you can see the trend of things going down, even if you're 25. And I do have patients that are in their 20s that do have low hormones. And I've even had other doctors report that there's teenage males and females with low hormones. So we have a bunch of xenoestrogens in our food, air, and environment today that are just completely wrecking our hormones, decreasing hormone numbers in men and women. And this is something that everybody needs more education on. You can check out some of my latest podcasts with she's a health coach, Laura Adler, very knowledgeable. And you can check that out here on the Dr. Madeira Show. You also can go and get the book called Estrogeneration by Dr. Anthony J, and he's a PhD in, I believe, biochemistry. Great book. It's on Audible too. So that will educate you more about xenoestrogens and how you can eat and be healthier and basically live a cleaner life so you're not exposed to these xenoestrogens, if that makes sense. So hopefully that makes sense to you. Also, I wanted to get into these questions. So there's somebody who said they were 44. Is it important to get hormones checked? And I said, absolutely. I'm not sure I think they were a female on Instagram. So if you are 44, male or female, I highly recommend that you get your hormones checked. Highly recommend that you work with somebody similar to myself who's well-versed in hormones, and this is what they specialize in. Ideally, you want to get blood and potentially some urine metabolites tested and start there and figure out what's going on, why you have certain symptoms. You could have low libido, you could have increased body fat, decreased lean muscle mass, just low motivation. You could have signs and symptoms of anxiety and depression, and these could all be related to your hormones. Also, if you're not sleeping as deeply, things like that, that can be like progesterone, pregnenolone. You need to find the root cause. You need to work with somebody who's specialized. We had another person ask, what are the most fibrous foods to include in your diet every day? Well, that's not really a hormone question. That's like a general health question. I would work with a functional medicine health coach or nutritionist or naturopathic doctor and work with somebody who can help you figure out what foods are high in fiber and good for you as an individual, because we practice individualized medicine. In general, if you just start eating more green leafy vegetables, so get more roughage in your diet, eat a rainbow, as we say. So you want to eat foods that are yellow, red, green, vibrant, live foods, foods that rot. So shop the perimeter of the grocery store. And also, I'm a proponent of eating red meat that's grass-fed, or if you are able to hunt wild game or know somebody that does, then eat that as well. So let's see, we had some other very specific questions. There's a person that says, how do you permanently lower sex hormone binding globulin, which is a protein made by your liver that helps shuttle around? It's like a shuttle bus for testosterone, dehydrotestosterone, and estradiol, and carries these hormones, these three hormones, around in your blood. So how would you permanently lower sex hormone binding globulin, SHBG, and why would it be high in a 39-year-old woman? Well, pregnancy increases sex hormone binding globulin, at least during pregnancy. And there's a bunch of other things that you would need to work with a doctor and see if this is like a trend for you or if it's kind of a one-time thing. So there are ways to decrease it, but first you want to figure out why is it elevated. So I did some digging, and there are many conditions that can cause low and high sex hormone binding globulin. So we're looking at this person having a low sex hormone binding globulin, and being obese can lower your sex hormone binding globulin. Type 2 diabetes or insulin resistance, which is metabolic syndrome or part of metabolic syndrome, the insulin resistance. Hypothyroidism, so low thyroid function, which is like an epidemic for men and women today, and even Hashimoto's thyroiditis, which is an autoimmune disease, is an epidemic for men and women today. Acromegaly, which is too much growth hormone causing body tissues that can grow larger and whatnot. So you need to work with a specialist here. And I'm not an endocrinologist. I'm not a medical doctor endocrinologist. I'm a naturopathic doctor specializing in functional endocrinology. So if somebody has acromegaly, you need to see an endocrinologist who specializes in that, I would say for sure. High levels of sex hormone binding globulin can be related to hepatitis, and there's hepatitis A, B, and C. Hyperthyroidism, which is typically Graves' disease, which is autoimmune. So we're looking at autoimmune disease on both sides of the fence here with high and low. HIV, so these infections can elevate sex hormone binding globulin, which means you're going to have low testosterone. And anticonvulsants, which are used to treat seizures. Seizure medications can increase sex hormone binding globulin, lowering your hormones. So that's why when you get a hormone panel, folks, you want to make sure that you don't just get testosterone from your primary care doctor or estrogen for women. And if you don't have eyes on sex hormone binding globulin, then you're not going to know what is actually bioavailable to your tissues, if that makes sense. Because these shuttle buses, albumin and sex hormone binding globulin, carry hormones around in your blood and drop them off so that your other cells in your body and your organs and everything can use testosterone, can use dehydrotestosterone, which is the most potent testosterone and binds to androgen receptors very well, more readily than testosterone itself. So, and then estradiol, which men and women need a certain amount of estradiol. Obviously, it's different for both men and women. And we have a couple other questions here. So on the same topic of sex hormone binding globulin, we have somebody asking most common values that are problematic and why that is. Also, some info about sex hormone binding globulin and ways to lower it. So one of my go-to approaches for lowering it is first you want to find out why. So usually if somebody has a thyroid issue or they have another health problem, then you want to look at, you know, why is this happening? So if someone has low sex hormone binding globulin, then they can have really high testosterone, which typically we don't really see today that much of. I mean, I guess you could have like a tumor secreting more testosterone, like if there was something going on there and that kind of metastasis, or you could just have somebody that is just genetically making tons of testosterone at some point in their life, typically before age 30. But if that was the case, then they could have fluid retention, acne, increased appetite and weight gain, increased muscle mass, mood swings. And if they're already on testosterone optimization therapy, then you want to bring down the dose if it's too high. Not take them off the therapy, but know how to manage it. So that's where a doctor like me comes in. So the most common values, I think that this person's referring to most common values for total testosterone. So LabCorp just lowered their values below 900 for the top range of total testosterone. And you want somebody to have at least 800 total testosterone, at least 30 free testosterone nanograms per deciliter, both of those, and at least 70 dehydrotestosterone. So that's for men. And then men need at least 20 picograms per deciliter serum blood of estradiol. So things to think about there. Those are the values that you want to look at. Don't pay attention to what these labs are measuring, because they're measuring for sick people. And I just had Jay Campbell on my podcast, and he was talking about how LabCorp now has decreased the range from below 900 for the top of the normal range, their normal range for total testosterone, and just above 100 for the bottom of the range for total testosterone. And when I got into this about 7 years ago, into this kind of work, what we were seeing is the range was about 350 or 345 to 1250 for total testosterone. So they definitely are lowering it, because this is basically a population study, if you will. The mean, if you go back to your math class from high school, if you're not a mathematician or good with math, is, you know, we're taking the bell curve and we're taking the middle of that for these lab tests. And these lab tests are saying, okay, this is now normal. And it's based on all these sick people who are overweight, have heart disease. They need to see a doctor. They need a lot of help, and they probably need integrative medicine care, because just natural medicine interventions will not be enough for them. So hopefully I've elaborated on sex hormone binding globulin and ways to lower it. I would use nettle root, which is my go-to. There is some research, if you go on PubMed, about plant constituents in nettle root binding or interfering rather with sex hormone binding globulin. And then they did some in vitro research with this nettle root extracts, showing that the lignans in nettle root are reduced binding activity of sex hormone binding globulin to testosterone, which is also helpful for enlarged prostate. So things to think about there. So it's basically binding to sex hormone binding globulin in this in vitro assay test they did. And they've shown that this one particular lignin was even better. This study is kind of old by some people's standards, maybe. It's in Planta Medica from 1997, December, but there's other research, and I've had clinical patient after patient show that nettle root, not the leaf, folks, nettle root is great for bringing up free testosterone levels, and been using it for almost a decade now for this, and longer for enlarged prostate in men. So this is great. It's a benign herb, and you can make an alcohol extract yourself, but I highly recommend buying or working with a practitioner who has high quality, like a 1-to-1 or 1-to-2 alcohol liquid extract. Usually an alcohol extract of a tincture is like a 1-to-5, and that's usually too weak to get therapeutic benefit for some people, especially if you have really high sex hormone binding globulin. Some people think that as aromatase enzyme takes testosterone and makes more estrogen, that sex hormone binding globulin goes up so that it can deal with all the excess estrogen and shuttle it around. So you want to figure out if that's happening too. And you can use, you know, DIM or eating more broccoli sprouts, eating more cruciferous vegetables to bring these estrogen metabolites and these hormone markers in nuanced ways into more balance. So maybe that's a little bit more nuanced for the practitioner listening, but things to consider. What is my go-to train of thought when females have estrogen dominance? So in females, estrogen dominance, it depends. Is the estrogen dominance because they have low progesterone and normal, quote unquote, optimal levels of estrogen? Then you want to bring up their progesterone. So you want to look at their progesterone, their estrogen to progesterone ratio. Are their estrogens actually truly elevated and progesterone is optimal? Or are their estrogens elevated and progesterones are suboptimal? So then in that case, you would have to bring into balance the estrogens with a anti-estrogenic diet, anti-inflammatory diet. If they're vegetarian, then that would be like a paleo vegetarian diet. If they're vegan, then you need to work with that. If they're able to be paleo, then, you know, limiting grains, limiting sugar, working on stress management. Estrogens, when they're elevated, can affect thyroid conversion of your active thyroid hormone to your inactive thyroid hormone. So that can affect energy. So people can feel moody and less energetic and things like that. So some things to consider there. Also, what we're seeing is that a lot of this over estrogen, this hyperestrogen for some people can be bad for the brain. There's something called catamenial epilepsy. So when the estrogens get high in these young women and girls, they have seizures, and that's catamenial epilepsy. So we give them progesterone compounded or Prometrium, which is like a generic prescription medication. So that can be helpful for that case. And basically, you want to optimize the thyroid. This person's asking for what thyroid optimization herbal protocols. Well, that really depends on what's going on and what the thyroid condition is. You want to avoid iodine in cases of autoimmune thyroiditis. I will say that right off the bat. So I'll say that again. You want to avoid seaweeds and iodine in cases of Hashimoto's thyroiditis, autoimmune thyroiditis, or if someone has a other autoimmune disease and they're looking to optimize thyroid health, you may already have undiagnosed autoimmune thyroid disease. And we're seeing this more and more in men who have unhealthy, really toxic, inflammatory lifestyles. So I would take out alcohol when a young lady or females have high estrogen. And I would also work on removing any GMO foods, really remove grains, especially in North America. And that would be my approach there. So we had another question about, I'm on Instagram. So this was posted on February 10th, and this is 10 days later, February 20th. Folks, if you aren't getting your hormones checked once a year, I highly recommend it. I just checked mine and I'm optimizing my hormones now and feeling a lot better. So I do walk my talk. And yeah, you definitely want to optimize brain health too, because your brain is the most important organ in the body. Without it, you can't live a joyful life. Not just neurotransmitters, but memory and cognition. So the hippocampus is the memory, one of the memory centers, the main deal there. So someone asked about Alzheimer's, how best do we prevent Alzheimer's? So currently I'm reading The End of Alzheimer's, the Bredesen Protocol, Dr. Dale Bredesen. So you can get his book and read it. And I would work with a practitioner who specializes in that. Obviously, you want to optimize your hormones, because if you don't have optimal hormones, you're more at risk for dementia. And you want to look into ridding yourself of mold. So you can go back to the podcast I did with Dr. Jill Krista and the one I did with Brian Carr about mold, both of them. Do not drink any water from your fridge. So that's one thing you can do right away to prevent dementia. Also, you want to eat healthy fats. You want to check your blood levels of certain things, especially APOE4 genotype is much higher risk for Alzheimer's. You want to optimize your omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acid levels. So that can be extremely helpful. So I had a question about MN and where to buy it. I do not prescribe that, and the supplement companies that I've been able to find online seem like they're pretty new that are making capsules of NMN, which has to do with like basically your mitochondria being more optimized. So there's a lot of ways today that people are learning how to optimize their mitochondria. Exercise is key. You have to exercise. You have to lift heavy things. You have to get outside and walk. And you have to eat right to optimize your mitochondria. Optimize your gut health will help your mitochondria too, because there are gut infections that can really wreck mitochondria by putting out these toxins into your blood. You also want to make sure that you're getting the key building blocks to basically precursors for NAD and ATP in your diet and from food. So acetyl L-carnitine has been really helpful for me personally and my patients for just that brain energy. You have a lot of mitochondria in your brain, so this goes back to Alzheimer's question too. You want to optimize mitochondrial health. CoQ10, you can do an organic acids urine test with me or your practitioner, and you can see if you need CoQ10. And then if you do, take it, because that will be really helpful for your heart, your kidneys, and your brain, and all the cells in your body. So, excuse me, that is basically my answer to that question. I mean, you can take other herbs and things. You can take D-ribose, which is very energizing. I took it when I was in medical school. You just don't want to take that too late in the afternoon. And the other herb that's really good for thyroid is ashwagandha. Big fan. I love Medi Herbs ashwagandha complex. It has skullcap in it. It has a little bit of licorice root in it. And it also has Korean ginseng. So that's great for mitochondria. It's great for these longevity inputs in our body. And the skullcap's calming but not sedating. So you can do like two tablets morning, two tablets noon. So things to think about there around mitochondrial health. I also had a question in my LiveStrong Facebook group that I would like to answer. What diet specifically do you recommend for those that have chronic inflammation, autoimmune diseases? And this may have been a practitioner. So in that case, it really depends on the patient, and it depends on what they like to eat and if they can cook for themselves. Hopefully they or someone in their home can cook for them. What I would recommend for them is that they either do a vegetarian, if they're vegetarian, or a paleo, autoimmune paleo diet, elimination diet with no grains and mostly vegetables. And if they eat meat, palm-sized serving of meat, two servings a day, and fish, and wild-caught fish to increase the omega-3 fatty acids, and take a high-quality fish oil, and do that for at least 1 to 2 months. And then start introducing through a food introduction plan every 5 to 7 days another food to see. For example, I can't eat cow dairy, but today at lunch I had organic goat yogurt, which may sound gross to some people, but it tastes fine. You can get it from Trader Joe's, or if you're in the greater Seattle area, you can get it from PCC, which is the Puget Sound Food Co-op here. It's a chain of food co-ops that has really great vegetables and produce and healthy meat that's grass-fed, like lamb and grass-fed beef and grass-finished beef. So that's what I typically recommend. You want an anti-inflammatory diet, and I try to make it as least restrictive as possible, because what happens is a lot of people and patients over the years back themselves into a corner and they get scared of food, and we don't want to be scared of our food. We just want to eat real food. And real food that rots. There was another question about peptides 101, that are peptides. In this case, we're talking about synthetic compounded peptides from a compounding pharmacy, like TaylorMade Compounding Pharmacy, that may be a capsule, a foam for like hair loss, or injectables that are usually injected subcutaneous, just below the skin with like an insulin needle in the belly fat. Well, I've done a lot of research and study into peptides. I just recorded a podcast with Jay Campbell, and we talked about some peptides there. You can also listen to the podcast that I did with my friend Amber, Dr. Amber Krogsrud, and she's an naturopathic doctor down in LA, and we talked about peptides extensively here on the Dr. Madeira Show podcast. So I would go and listen to those podcasts, and then I would contact TaylorMade Compounding Pharmacy. This is a practitioner that asked this question, and I would get set up with them and tell them that Dr. Madeira sent you, because they need to know where you're getting this information from. So if you are familiar with peptides, cool. If you're not, you can also, if you're not a physician or a practitioner, you can go and listen to those podcasts with Dr. Amber and Jay Campbell. He's not a doctor, but he's very, very well versed in these things and has been using these things for a long time. Also, to optimize your mitochondria, you can use red light therapy, which I'm probably going to start doing this weekend because our sunny days are numbered here in Seattle. We've had a very sunny week here this week in February after 80 days of no sunshine. So the red light therapy does really help with seasonal affective disorder. So if you are in a place or a location where you have a lot of dark weather in the winter months or the fall through winter and early spring, then I would recommend red light therapy 10 minutes twice a day or 20 minutes in the morning. And don't overdo it, because then you're harming yourself. But that's what I would recommend. So hopefully I've answered everybody's questions adequately enough. I also want to just say thank you, everybody, for listening to my podcast. Please share it with friends and family. We are going to have other amazing guests in the future. If you know somebody who is very knowledgeable about topics like peptides, hormones, optimizing their health, please send them my way. You can have them contact us at 206-779-7747. That's Apollo Health Clinic's cell phone number. If you're looking for a naturopathic doctor in Montana or Washington State, I am accepting patients, so you can contact me at that phone number. Again, is 206-779-7747. Or you can just email directly to drmadeira, M-A-D-E-I-R-A, at apollohealthclinic.com, or go to apollohealthclinic.com and check out what we have to offer. We do have some free resources for men and women. So you can go to apollohealthclinic.com and just type in the search box in our website, not in your web browser, for andropause for men. And then you can sign up for that free document. And then for women, we have a perimenopause one too. So you can get those for free. And if you want to sign up for our newsletter, you can email me as well at drmadeira@apollohealthclinic.com, and I'll add your email to our bi-monthly newsletter. I also wanted to add a few things here about sex hormone binding globulin, just as an addendum to today's Ask Me Anything AMA podcast, because it's really deserves a lot more attention, I think, than I gave it on the first part of today's podcast. So basically, as mentioned before, sex hormone binding globulin, SHBG, is a blood test that you can get done through LabCorp or Quest Diagnostics in the United States, or any conventional lab company in pretty much in most places. And symptoms that would mean necessity for this test, medical necessity, would be for men, pointing more towards low testosterone. So low sex drive, low libido, difficulty getting an erection or maintaining an erection, maybe fertility problems. Symptoms of high testosterone in women may include excess body and facial hair growth, could be a deepening of the voice, menstrual cycle irregularities, maybe fertility problems, weight gain, acne, and this could be coupled with insulin resistance in women, and that could point more towards PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome. For men, it could be hypogonadism. So you want to check sex hormone binding globulin for any patient that you're going to be checking already, things like estrogen and testosterone and dehydrotestosterone, because it carries around these hormones in the body. And in particular, if sex hormone binding globulin levels are too low, it can be low thyroid, as mentioned in the past, type 2 diabetes, overuse of steroid medications, could be even Cushing syndrome, which is a condition where your body makes too much of a hormone called cortisol, which is an adrenal hormone. For men, it can mean cancer of the testes or adrenal glands, and adrenal glands are these basically walnut-sized endocrine glands on top of the kidneys, and they make a lot of different hormones that affect your body. So cortisol, DHEA, epinephrine, norepinephrine. And for women, it could really be helpful for their PCOS. If you're managing PCOS, you want to test sex hormone binding globulin. For levels that are too high, as mentioned before, you can use nettle root. I'm not a big fan of salt palmetto for multiple reasons. I believe Ryan Drum, PhD, up here in the San Juan Islands of Washington, is written about how salt palmetto, first of all, it's from Florida, and we're pretty far from Florida, so there's an environmental impact of that. Second of all, he thinks it's a more estrogen or female herb, and you can read his blog online, I think it's still there, about it. Sex hormone binding globulin levels are, when they're too high, it could be liver disease, like hepatitis, as already mentioned. It could be eating disorders even, which I didn't mention. For men, it can mean a problem with the testes not making enough testosterone, or the pituitary gland not sending a strong enough signal of luteinizing hormone LH to make testosterone. So that's either primary or secondary hypogonadism. The pituitary gland is very important, and it's shooken up in head injuries, as mentioned on other podcasts. And for women, it can mean a problem with the pituitary gland as well, potentially, or it could be Addison's. So these are things that you want to work with specialists on. And oftentimes today, we need a team of doctors that can help you with these things. So just keep all those things in mind. And sex hormone binding globulin levels are normally high in children of both sexes. So the test is almost always used for adults. So I specialize in working with adults. Most of my patients are older than age 20. And I would even say if you wanted to do even more kind of clenching down of the numbers and who I see, usually they're age 35 to 55. There are some outliers though. So we're talking about adults here. This is adult functional endocrinology topic. I think I neglected to answer one of the AMA Ask Me Anything questions off of Instagram. So I wanted to do my due diligence there and get to the question, even though I feel like it's a little bit outside my expertise since I don't specialize in cancer. And this person, I would recommend, if you are listening, to see if, I assume you already are an oncologist, but I would see a naturopathic doctor who specializes in cancer, integrative cancer therapies. So they ask pituitary gland adenoma. So we already talked about the pituitary gland. They have no menstrual cycle, low estrogen, memory loss, anxiety, lethargy, fatigue. Any advice greatly appreciated. So, I mean, before getting into it, I would have conversations with your integrative oncologist specialist about things like low-dose naltrexone, if that would be helpful for you. I don't know what therapies this person has had, if they've had, you know, chemotherapy or radiation or what the combination is. Again, I'm not an integrative oncologist. I don't specialize in this area. But I would look into, you know, ketogenic diets if that's okay for you. Get an ApoE4 genotype test before doing a ketogenic diet for everybody. But ketogenic diets have been helpful for cancer patients and are helpful for the brain, because if you eat enough healthy fats, so things like olive oil, olives, avocados, if you're not allergic to these things, and other healthy fats, not just like eating peanut butter and bacon, but like a healthy ketogenic diet, and making this something that you look into with a practitioner helping you do this and if this would be beneficial for you and your constitution and this adenoma that you have. I would also look into medical cannabis. I did work in the medical cannabis clinics for a while, and I did see it helpful for brain cancers. So I'd look into those therapies and talk to somebody who does know about those things. Anxiety, sometimes certain strains act differently for different people. When they have anxiety, maybe you can't do a cannabis sativa, or maybe cannabis indica will make you more anxious. So it depends on the individual. Typically for most people, cannabis indica is like a knockout drug. It's not a drug, it's a plant, but for lack of a better term, it is very sedative and great for pain and anxiety and things like that. Memory loss, I don't know if that's from any therapies you've had before or if this is part of the adenoma. The lethargy, again, you got to look at what therapies you've already had from an oncologist and what those side effects are, and then what naturally you can do integratively with an integrative practitioner. I don't even know where this person lives, so I can't recommend somebody, but if you go to naturopathic medicine and you go to Google, you put a naturopathic medicine doctor, and there's a specialist who you can look for around that. There's a whole board certification. So I can just do it right now while I'm on the podcast. So be naturopathic doctor, board certification, oncology. Let's see. So they have their whole board where you have to get a whole other level of training, and we call it FABNO. So FABNO, and that is where you want it. That's the basically the designation. If you're going to somebody in the United States or North America, they need to have an ND after their name, or an NMD, which means naturopathic medical doctor or naturopathic doctor, depending on the states. And then you want to see the letters FABNO. Or if you're in the greater Seattle area, you could go to Dr. Paul Anderson's clinic, which is in Northgate, and they are experts in working with oncology patients. So the FABNO designation is what you want to look for. All right, well, I think I have done my duties and answered everybody's questions now. So hopefully that does it. And please, again, share the podcast with everybody. I look forward to getting more people listening to us on iTunes. Please give us 5 stars if you're already listening on iTunes and other platforms, Spotify, Google Podcasts, etc. We love to get the feedback. We want to hear what you want to hear more of. You can call or text us at 206-779-7747 and let us know what you liked and what guests you would like us to interview in the future. Thank you so much. And again, share with friends and family. We're doing this for you. All our best. Stay healthy. Get healthy. Take care of yourselves. Love yourselves. Take care. Have a good one. Bye.
Now here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.